Okay, Agidavach, Agidamayed. We are learning Bamatsiya Daf Samach. We're learning Sunday's Daf. We're going to learn tomorrow's Daf and try to get ahead for the second days. We left off at the Mishnah at the bottom of Nuntes Amad Beis. Mishnah Bam Beis. This is the last Daf in Perek Hazav. And we, Mitzvah Shem, will start Perek Ezu Neshech. So these are two of the harder Prakim in Shas, certainly in this Pesachta. We're finishing Hazav and Mitzvah Shem and starting Ezu Neshech. Okay. Suck the Mishnah again, bottom of Nuntes and Beis. Aim Arvin, we're going back now to practices that can be considered cheating or in relations to Aina. Aim Arvin, Paris by Paris. One cannot mix Paris from one field with Paris from another field. So basically, there was an agreement with a purchaser that he's going to sell this purchaser grain from field A, and now he wants to mix in grains from field B. He's not allowed to do that. Even if both the grains are new. Now, the idea of new grains are, they didn't dry out yet. Since they didn't dry out yet, so they produce less flour. You have a choice to grind them now, or wait till they dry and then grind them and you'll get a little more flour. So there's a benefit to older grains that are already more dry for creating a more volume of flour. So says the Mishnah, even if you're mixing new grains to new grains, you're not mixing in outside grains that are new into old. Still, it's a problem. And the Mishnah continues, but certainly, if you're going to mix new grains into an agreement of buying, of selling old grains, you're going to mix new grains in. That's for sure a problem because you're giving him stuff which is, less, it's going to be less volume for him. Bemisamru, they said, Bemis Amru means, in truth, they said, and the Mara over here is actually a home base for the idea that Bemis Amru means, that's how you paskin. Bemis Amru, B'yayin etiru la'arev kashabarach. That when it comes to wine, you're allowed to mix in, the seller's allowed to mix stronger wine into a more mild wine. Why could he do that? Mishnah explains why. Mishnah bashpicha, because it improves the wine. The stronger wine improves the more mild wine. It makes the overall wine better. And therefore, the buyers would be agreeable to it. Now, the Mefarshim point out that we're talking about a guy who agreed to sell mild wine, and he's now blending it so strongly into the mild wine, that's just only going to make it better, therefore it's allowed. If the agreement was to sell strong wine to begin with, only strong wine, then of course he can't mix the strong with the mild and sell that. That would be going against what he had agreed, to sell. That is how Rashi qualifies this line of the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah further, but again, mixing in, if you agree to some mild wine and you mix it in strong wine, that's okay. One cannot mix, the seller cannot mix the sediment of the wine into the wine. But the seller could put back the sediment. Now, line to line, it seems like it doesn't read. So the simple taich, which is going to be the most ultimate taich, so we'll kill any suspense, is you can't mix outside sediment into wine, but its own sediment you can mix. And that's ultimately how the Mara is going to explain the Mishnah. The Mara is going to first take another approach and dismiss it before we get there. But that's going to be the ultimate explanation, again, that I cannot mix in sediment from barrel A into barrel B. But if I'm pouring out wine from barrel A, I pour it into a bunch of different smaller pitchers, and there's sediment left, I can pour the sediment that remains in the barrel into it. I can spread it out amongst those pitchers. That's its own sediment is okay to pour it in. Mishas are my biyena. What if a person has wine that got mixed with some water, got diluted? He cannot sell in the store as regular wine unless he informs the purchasers that this wine is somewhat diluted. And he cannot sell it to a merchant, even if the merchant is notified, because we don't trust the merchants. We're scared the merchant's going to pass it off to his buyers as if it's not diluted, and he's going to cheat the buyers. Says the Mishnah, because the merchant's only going to cheat his customers with this diluted wine, so you can't sell that to a merchant. You can't set up a merchant with something that you know he's going to deal with improperly with his buyers. In a place where the minig is to dilute wine, the sellers dilute wine with water, yatilu, you're able to put it in. Hatagar, neitel mehe granes, a merchant could take from five different grains, meaning grains of five different threshing floors, literally granes of threshing floors, and mix it into one big silo and sell from there. And similarly, you can take wine from five different vats, five different wine presses, and put it into one cask. Unless provided he's not purposely trying to mix it up. The point is, everyone knows that the big merchants or the big wine sellers, they're getting their product from multiple sources and multiple places. So you know you're buying a mix when you buy it. So for him to mix it is not a problem, because this is the general idea from here to the end of this parak, the next mission as well, things that the sellers are aware, that the buyers are aware of, and things that the buyer expect are not a problem. It's when you're tricking the buyers, that's when it's a problem. So merchants, it's understandable that they're getting their grains from multiple sources. They have to keep getting different suppliers for their grains, and they may be mixed together, and their wine as well. And therefore, it's okay to mix together unless you're doing it purposefully just to kind of, try to make as you take your better stuff and you want to spread it out and dilute it a bit to make sure that you mix it with other stuff to make sure you have more. If you're doing it on purpose, that's a problem. But if you stop as you're doing it, that's the normal practice of the merchant, that's okay. Tanaban. When we send the Mishnah, that you agree to sell a certain amount of, of grain to someone, you can't mix new and old. So the Mishnah, the Gemara just elaborates, I don't have to tell you, if the new grain is from a grain that's priced at 4 sas per sella, and the old one is priced at 3 sas per sella, so you're basically mixing in cheap grain of, which was 4 sas per sella, into a grain that's more expensive, of course that's a problem, they marvin, because you're cheating him on the value. Ella filichadish is the other way. El filichadash is mishalish vishanas marba. What if the old grain sells for 4 sas per sella? The new grain sells for 3 sas per sella. So you're mixing a new grain that's more expensive, it's more valuable. Still can't do it. Marvin. Why? So this line of the Gemara is a little bit shiloh with the Girsis even, and with the Taichas. We're going to Taichas the way we have it. Mesha adam reitz liashon. Meaning, the fact that people are willing to pay more is not indicative that every buyer wants it. Just because someone's willing to pay more, that guy is willing to sit in it. He's willing to sit in the new grain and sit in it and wait till it dries, and he wants to dry it in his way. He's happy to pay the premium. But the fellow who's overall, the green wants to buy old grains, even if the old grains is cheaper, he still wants old grains. He doesn't want you to mix in new, more expensive grains, because then he has to wait for it till it's time to grind it into flour. He's not interested in waiting, and therefore still a problem. That's why it's usher, even if it's new, the new is more expensive. Bemis Amru. B'yayin etiru la'ariv kasha b'rach m'beishu mashbicha. We said in the Mishnah that the Emes Amru, you can mix in the strong wine with the mild wine because the strong wine, it actually improves the mild wine. It's beneficial. So the case we said was the guy had made up to sell, to buy, the more mild wine, and was saying you let him mix it in because all you're doing is making it better. You're not making it worse. Okay. So says the Gemara now. Amar Blazer, Ad Amra. This Mishnah is kind of like we find elsewhere a similar lesson of Ad Amra. It's like Hadahu. This is a Zay Samaris. This teaches us Kol Bemes Amru Halachi. Wherever it says Bemes Amru, it's Halacha. What's going on over here? So Rashi elaborates. The Mishnah went on to say Arak Sal Tzvara. The Mishnah goes on to say Meish Mashbichi, because he's only doing better by this buyer, not worse. So it's Pasha that it's okay. So since the Mishnah said Halacha starting with the words Bemes Amru, and then it gave an explanation that's indisputable, that's an Araya that all over Shas where it says Bemes Amru, that means that's talacha. And the simple type Rashi is learning it means, what it means is that's talacha, that's how we paskin. Bemazar means that's talacha, that is how we paskin. That is how Rashi understands it. Rambam Pirsha Mishnayas Nagdama learns Bemaz Amru is a way of saying halacha l'mesh mesinai. Bemazar means halacha l'mesh mesinai. That's how you can read this Gemara also. Ad the Amr, I'm not sure we see the right for the Mishnah of a kol Bemaz Amru halachi. Halachi meaning halacha l'mesh mesinai. Now, Rambam Mishnah says very gishmak, because meaning gishmak is the way we just said with Rashi. Rambam holds, we point out in the past many times, Rambam holds as a rule, there's no machlekes by halacha l'mesh mesinai. So there's no machlekes anyway, which means we paskin like it. So there's no machlekes by halacha l'mesh mesinai, it's Rambam's klal. There's many questions on it, we have fun case, we see that machlekes, but Rambam's klal is no machlekes. So ultimately it comes out that Rambam and Rashi aren't so far apart in Mishnah this Gemara. They're both agreeing that when it says Be'emes Amru, it's going to be the halacha. Rashi is saying just as in terms of that's how we paskin, and Rambam would be saying in terms of it's halacha sumayshu v'sinai, which typically doesn't have machlekes. So of course, vayta that would be how we paskin. Okay, Amar Nachman. So Nachman just qualifies and says, ubeina gitashanu. This thing you allow to mix in the better wine into the shvacher wine, which makes it better, the stronger wine into the weaker wine, is only beina gitas, meaning in the beginning of the season when you're producing the wine. Once it's being produced, you can mix it. However, to mix it later on, once the wine is already produced, that is not considered as gishmak. That could be a blend of existing tastes, and maybe that wouldn't be so good. The Gemara just points out, v'idna, but in the reading of the times of the Gemara, to come arvi, shle b'na gita, says after Nachman's day, the hanaga was to mix it even, even not between the gitas, b'na gita means by the wine press, even not at the time of the wine press, even later, after fermented already, they would mix it. How does that work according to Nachman? The Gemara gives two answers, Amar Papa, diyad v'kamachli, either, because again, this is the big yisrael of the day, if the buyers know, and they're meichel, that's fine. It's only a matter of not deceiving the buyers. So the other kamachli, they know about this practice, and they're meichel, therefore it's still okay. Rav Acha to do later. Rav Acha bereid of ikamar hamani Rav Acha, the author of this idea, this concept that they mix the wines today even after the initial season, pressing season, is Rav Acha, and the Mar explains. To tell you, went to the price, Rav Acha matir b'davar anitim. Rav Acha held anything that the buyer tastes, there's no problems. If the buyer tastes it and he knows what he's getting into, as long as he tastes it and he approves it before he finishes the purchase, then we're not concerned anymore about you're blending, you're mixing, it's going to be a trick. We're not concerned. He tasted it. He's okay with it. And therefore, it's fine. That's already, that's fine. And that, therefore, mixing the wines later wouldn't be a problem as long as the buyer had the ability to take a sample and taste it. Okay. We said in the Mishnah that you can't mix the sediment of wine into the wine, but you could put the sediment back in, which the Gemara says right away. The Reisha says you can't mix sediment in. And the Sefer says you could put the sediment back in. How do we interpret it? What are you going to say? Maybe it means as follows. It means you inform the buyer. Again, the key idea of the day. As long as you inform the buyer, maybe that makes everything okay. Typically it does. Maybe that's what the Mishnah means. But it can't be that's what the Mishnah means. Why? We said about the wine that was diluted. You can't sell in the store unless you notify the buyer. The Mishnah only over there points out this idea of notifying the buyer. Sounds like in the Reisha. The Lion Tiger and says, but even to a merchant, even if you do notify him, you can't let him sell it because he's going to cheat people. Fine, but that's only a concept of being idea that we introduce in the Sefer. The Reisha, even if you were Maidia, still whatever the Mishnah is talking about that was permissible, namely mixing in the sediment, is even without being Maidia. So that can't be Pshat in the Mishnah. Amar Yehuda, we spoke out this answer already. You cannot mix sediment from yesterday's wine. It really means, it's not enough yesterday, today. It just means from a barrel that we dealt with yesterday, that was emptied yesterday, you can't empty that sediment in the barrel that you're emptying today. And vice versa. You can't, it's nothing to do with yesterday. The point is it's different barrels of wine. You can't mix sediment from one barrel into another barrel. But sediment from its own barrel, if you're moving wine from barrel to barrel, or you're moving into other pitchers and the sediment left over, then you could put that back into the wine. The ratio, the normal ratio of sediment that's supposed to be there is fine. You have a price that backs this up. One is pouring wine for his friend. He's pouring it slowly. And by pouring it slowly, the sediment, which is heavier, may settle and stay at the bottom of the barrel or whatever it is that you're pouring out from. The sediment is staying in your pitcher, your barrel. You cannot pour that sediment from yesterday's wine into today's wine. Or from today's into yesterday's. You can't mix up where it's going into. You could pour yesterday's into yesterday's, yesterday's sediment into yesterday's wine. And today's sediment into today's wine. That's not a problem. That's what the Mishnah means. You can't mix sediment from one to another, but you could put its own sediment back into it. We said, if the wine got mixed with a little water, you can sell in the store as long as you notify the customers, but you still can't sell it to the tagger. Rava is a story that relates to the Rava selling wine back to a, or giving it back to the tagger. Let's see. Rava says, but they bought Rava wine from a store, and the wine had already been somewhat diluted, seems like, because Rava did his normal practice, which is mazgitame. Rava went and diluted it, and then he tasted it. Lava basam, and the taste wasn't good. So he sent it back to the store. He wanted back his money. He sent it back to the store. You can't sell diluted wine to the merchant, even though you told him. And who I didn't, you returning it back to the merchant is a problem because you're just sending the problem upstream. The merchant's going to cheat someone else. Amalei Rava says, Rava said this simple answer. The wine that I just diluted, perhaps because it was diluted before as well, is so diluted, anyone could see it. It's not, no one's being tricked. The point is, people can't be tricked. We're not worried. No one's going to be tricked. V'chiteima, as Rava says, but maybe you'll tell me, the Tafi Machalei, that maybe the storekeeper will add some more regular, undiluted wine into the mix in order to make it now that it's kind of more of a manageable dilution, and then he won't notify the customer about the fact that it's diluted at all, and he's going to take advantage of the customer. Maybe right now, the way I'm giving it back, it's so fully diluted and no one can notice, but maybe he's going to adulter it a bit and it won't be so fully diluted, and maybe I should be concerned, says Rava. I'm not concerned, you know what? Umazmali, and then I'll sell it. You're right, that's a possibility, but we can't control everything. Otherwise, you should never be able to do any business with a merchant. A merchant can always, if he wants to play games, play games. The mission just was, you can't sell him something that right now is ripe for him to take advantage of a buyer, of a customer. But if If right now he can't take advantage, no, he could tweak and then take advantage. And the say, if you can't, we're not going to say that's usser, and therefore Rav was fine sending it back to the merchant. We said the Mishnah Makom Shnagu Hatol Mayim B'Yayin Atilu, in a place where the minig is to put to dilute the wine already yourself, not to sell, you know, the whole concentrated wine, but to dilute it, you let it do it. And the Brayza just elaborates Tana Lemechsel Shishurvia up to a half 50-50 water wine Lishlish a third of water into the wine or a via or a quarter of it is could be water. And the before I should point out that the Brayza is not saying three different sheets shirim stamazay. It really depends on the locale. Wherever the minig of the makam is, that the seller can dilute it before he sells it to that to the level that's the norm for that makam. Amar Rav, and Rav elaborates again that we had this idea earlier. This dilution is dafka done at the time of the when the wine was pressed and it's before it starts fermenting. That's when the seller could dilute it. Otherwise, he can't dilute it. The buyer could dilute it later, but the sellers can't dilute it after it already has fermented into wine. Zakti Mishnah. Rabbi Daniel Chachamini Kleis began Viter practices. The Mishnah described practices which are either okay or not okay for storekeepers to do. Rabbi Daimer, Lechachamini Kleis Begaisma Tanaikis. Shavuta held that a storekeeper cannot give out this. Now these days, the money equivalent would obviously be like candies and treats. Back in the day, they used to toast grains and make a little sweet or nuts. They used to give it to the children in order that when the children, the mother would send the child to go buy a loaf of bread or to go buy some product, this child knows that this store gives him a little treat every time he comes, and therefore his child's going to frequent that store. So he says, it's not a fair practice. You're harming the other sellers. And the Chacham is saying, no problem. That's business. He's giving this treat. You match it. That's what the market does. Give the kid some other treat. We'll see. The Gemara is going to elaborate. And a person, according to Behudil Khair, this is talking again, a person should not lower, he shouldn't sell below the market. Let's say there's a fixed market price. He shouldn't go and undercut the market and sell below the market. Not only is it mutter, he's lowering the price for everyone. That's amazing. That's great. But we just bothered that these storekeepers are going to have their margins shrunk and not going to take profit. And the Chacham says, because you're lowering the value for the overall market. It is dangerous if storekeepers can't make parnasa, can't make a living. Besides, for them not making a living, it will ultimately cause, you know, sometimes the big stores, they undercut everyone, put them out of business, and then they can, you know, they can gouge the market. But we're going to see the Gemara. The idea is the Chacham was saying Zachlotay because what's going to happen is that it's all within reason. The guy lowers the price. This guy is charging a sharper price. The other storekeepers will match, and they're going to end up just shrinking the margins of the wholesaler. They're going to end up, it's all obviously within an amount. The wholesaler can still afford it. They're going to just claw it back from the wholesaler to make sure they're still making enough money, and therefore it's okay. L'chayre, if something's going to destroy the market, the Chacham would agree. The Mishnah doesn't get into that much detail. Le'ever, as we said, you cannot sift crushed beans to remove some of the garbage because it gives the appearance. Well, there's the way Rashi learns is that it's just the problem is that when you remove some of the garbage, it makes it look so much better, and you charge a much higher price, much more than the effort involved in cleaning it, which is a chiddush because you say the person can know what effort's involved, and there's going to be another sheet that actually holds that way. But Abisho holds that the effort involved in cleaning it and the price you charge for cleaning it is totally disproportionate, and therefore you can't do that. Even the Chum agree that to sift just the top and leave the bottom, that's an optical illusion. You're showing people that you have these beans that are crushed and sifted, and they're really not. It's just the top layer. That's a problem. You're stealing the eye. You're tricking the person. You cannot beautify the following products when you're selling them. Leis Adam, if you're selling an Evikanani as a slave, leis a behema or an animal, leis a kalem or kalem, you can't beautify them for a sale. The Gemara again is going to qualify what exactly that means. Zok the Gemara. Might the Rabbanan spend the Rabbanan that allow that the children, the storekeepers, can bait the children with these treats? Darmer Lake, because the shopkeeper is giving out the nuts and the toasted grains, can tell the other guy, I'm giving nuts. Ad Pagishiski, you give prunes. You know, some storekeepers give a baker's dozen. Like, you have to compete. That's all. I'm not doing anything that's considered out of the normal practice, and therefore you have to compete. Lowering the price, Tanakama says a problem. for the market price, and the Chum say no, it's a good value. Because Achmai Tavit Darbanan, what's the Darbanan L'Chayra? He's damaging the competitors. Why isn't it a problem? So, like we answered this, we got it from Mishum the Kamarvech Latara. We're talking about a case where he's easing up the margins of the wholesalers. So he's just making the whole market lower. This seller, but he's not causing the other sellers to lose their profit. They just have to match his pricing, and overall together, collectively, they'll get a better pricing from the wholesalers. Layover, as like we said, Divya Abishol, you cannot clean the beans, the crushed beans, because it's the amount of money you charge for it is more than the value of the work. Abishol, that's Abishol Shit of Khamatir Khamatir. Man Khabim Rabacha, Hula Kham Rabacha, the Tanya Bacha Matir, but Davar Nira. Rabacha says people are smart enough. They can see it. They know what effort it takes to peel the pomegranate seeds out of the pomegranate, and they're choosing to pay for it, to pay a premium. So just because the seller is charging much more disproportionate to the amount of work that he did, if the buyer wants to pay for it, he knows you're not tricking anybody. There's no fooling, and therefore it's not a problem. Says the Gemara Tanabanim, a brisa on this topic. You can't make the animals here stand up. By making the animals here stand up like a stick, it makes the animal look thicker and more strong, and that's a problem. The Gemara explain a couple lines for now. How would you do that? How do you make the hair stand up? You can't inflate the intestines of an animal, making it look bigger than it is, like blowing into the air. And it can't soak the meat in water. It is interesting. Pasha, I know this from Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael in the meat, they actually have in some of the packages a water percentage content. They inject some water in there because you're paying for weight. You're paying for weight, and some of it is water. It actually says in some of the packages of meat there. I mean, at least 20 years ago when I was living there, it would say on the package X percentage of, kind of like, you know, when you buy gas in North America, it says may contain X percentage of ethanol. So there was an X percentage of water. That's not what this is. They used to soak it in water because the water gives it a whitish look. And we know marbleized meat, this hasn't changed since the time of the Gemara, marbleized meat was considered a little more chasha, fatty meat, had a little more flavor, better. So it would give it a fake appearance of the meat being marbleized. That was the problem with soaking in water. That's what Rashi explains, not the weight issue. Could be that be a separate issue, but that's not what this means. This is more the dressing it up. Mayin misharbitim, when we said you can't make the animal's hair stick up, what does that mean? Hachadakim amaya de chizra. Over the attached to mean, they used to give the animal a bran drink, water that was soaked in bran, give the animal to drink, and it caused the hairs to stand up. Simply, you brush it. They brush out the hairs. And we're saying both those practices are not allowed to make the animal look more stout. It's interesting. You think, you know, making your product look as nice as possible before you sell it. Nothing. You're not deceiving anybody. But apparently these practices were considered somewhat deceptive, and you couldn't do it. Shmuel Shalom Rimba Tumi L'Sarbala. However, look at the following things are going to be mutter. Shmuel allowed to attach to a coat silk-like fringes, which makes it look more attractive. That was okay, even though it disproportionately maybe raises the value. That was okay. Maybe the Charlotte Kaskusi Karmi, maybe it was matter to starch a baguette to give it a stronger look, a more stiffer look. On the flip side, Rava Charlotte made it, sorry, Rava was matter to beat canvas to make the threads look finer. Rava Charlotte Samigiri, Rava also allowed those who sold arrows to paint the arrows. And of Papa Shmuel, similarly, Charlotte Samigiri, he allowed those who sold wicker baskets to paint the baskets. Aye, Vanantanan. How does this all stem with the mission of dressing up items for sale? We just said you can't do that. Or it's a simple answer, like Kasha, and this really gets back to the Yisoid. We've been saying the whole share so far. It depends if it's new or if it's old. What's the difference? New product is meant to look nice. You're dressing it up, you're not deceiving anybody. By trying to take old product and make it look new, that's a problem. Trying to pass off a used item as new item, that's when it's a problem. But if it's clear that it's used or it's clearly new and you're just trying to make it look nicer to make it more appealing to the buyer, that's fine. Trying to brush out the hairs of the animal to make it look fatter and stronger than it is, that's when it gets problematic. But otherwise, not an issue. Says the Gemara, Pirchas Adam Mahi. How do you beautify a person? We're talking about someone being sold as a slave. What is it? What's an example of trying to fool someone? There's this old slave. He went, he dyed his hair on his head and on his beard. And he came in front of Rava, Amarle Zibna, and he said to Rava, buy me. Amarle, buy me as an Evan. Amarle, Rava said, Rava quoted actually the Mishnah in Avis, in the first parak. What does Mishnah say? You aniyim b'nei bezecha. Poor people should be the members of your home, which means let poor people do work for you. Hire them to give them parnasa. Let them do work for you. So Rava says, it's very nice. I can buy you as a slave, but I'd rather be Mekayim the Mishnah of hiring poor people to give them parnasa. So Rava got saved from the scandal, from this guy that was really old and dyed his hair. Rava got saved because he heeded the Mishnah. Keep that in mind. Also came from Papa Shmuel. This slave came from the Papa Shmuel. Zame and Rav Papa Shmuel bought this slave. Mind you, Rav Papa Shmuel, did we just quote him? It was, no, Shmuel. I thought it was Papa Shmuel. Okay, we just had Shmuel allowed to attach the silk to the bottom of the coat. Okay, fine. Says Gemara, Amalei also went to Papa Shmuel. Zabne Papa Shmuel bought this slave. Yemachad Amalei. One day, the slave Papa Shmuel told his Rav Papa Shmuel told the slave, Ashkan Maya, go bring me some water to drink. Also chivah the beish of the dignity. So he went and he got rid of the dye, the slave, and he showed that his beard and his hair and his head were all very white. Amalei, and then he said to Rav Papa Shmuel, Chazi dana kishish ma'avuch. I'm older than your father, and you're gonna have me going to be a vassal leper to sell me water. So give me other. I can't do that kind of work. Karen Avshei, Rav Papa Shmuel called about himself. Tzadik mitzara nechlas. The tzadik gets saved in the tzara. Ve'avi achar tachtav, and someone else comes in his place. The Gemara doesn't quote the entire pasuk. The actual Lashon pasuk is maybe that's on purpose that the Rasha comes in his place. Of course, Chas v'Shalom, Rav Papa Shmuel was not a Rasha. He just meant that he didn't listen to the Mishnah of us like Rava did, and he ended up suffering because of it. So he was applying to himself that pasuk, but Chas v'Shalom to say that Rav Papa Shmuel was a Rasha, but he did lose out because he didn't follow that advice of the Mishnah, says the Gemara, Hadmalach Azov. We finished Perek Azov, Mazel Tov. Before we start the next Mishnah, a quick basic hakdama to the dinim of ribbis. First of all, the idea of ribbis is, of course, lending with interest. Lending with interest is a problem. Minat Torah, the issur of ribbis is a ribbis ketuta, is a loan set up mitchila that, let's say, I'm borrowing $4, I'm going to pay back $5. That was the original abmach. That is classic ribbis. It doesn't make a difference how much it is. It could be very little. The interest rate doesn't matter. Right? And by legal laws, there's usury, there's laws against interest rates of more than 20%, 25%, 30%, whatever the number is. But Minat Torah, when it's mutter totally. If it's usher, to a gayel, it's mutter. To a yid, it's usher, even the most minute amount. And the Mefreshim also point out that even though it's going to be clear, we're going to have a lashon of neshech. The name of the parak is Ezu Neshech. The Pasuk in the Chumash says Lashem Neshech, of biting. And there are Lashonis that are mashma that we lump together Ribbis with Gzela, with Aina, and the like. Ribbis is very different. Gzela and Aina, the victim does know about it, or the victim's being taken advantage of. Ribbis, the guy knows about it. He may not be even referred to as a victim. He may not be referred to as a victim. It's a normal thing. A person should not be expected. Again, the Torah does, but on a regular level, a person, l'chayra, rationally, should not be expected to tie up his money and not try to be making money on his money, and vice versa, the person who's getting the benefit, people would pay money. It's ma'aseh b'chol yom to be able to utilize someone's money. So money also has a value. The Torah made an obligation on a yid to lend his fellow yid without ribbis, but l'chayra, it's not because it wouldn't be put completely. Again, the Gemara, we're going to have Gemara shortly. In a few lines, it's going to lump it together. Maybe we'll have it in tomorrow's daf. Lump together Gzela, Aina, and Ribbis. But it's very different. A key factor over here is, by Ribbis, the borrower is also Iver. The guy who borrows is Iver. If he's a victim, why would he be Iver? If it's all about victimization, you don't say the Nigzel's Iver, or the other side of the Aina deal is Iver. It doesn't work that way, right? But by Ribbis, he's also Iver. It seems to be some element of maybe taking advantage, but for the most part, we're saying it's mutter to a guy. You're not going to cheat a guy. You can't steal from a guy. You can't do a not to a guy. You're not going to cheat a guy. But ribbis is mutter. So l'chayra, it's a clear raya that ribbis is not 100% evil. Again, ribbis minat Torah is usher to another yid, but not because it's mamish like stealing or like I know. I think it's a key point to keep in mind. Now, there's ribbis ketutza we spoke at, classic ribbis deraisa. Then, of course, there's different forms of either a Ramas Ribbis or a Vak Ribbis. Ribbis Rabbanans will typically refer to as a Vak Ribbis. They are not derisive, but they resemble Ribbis, and they're Aser Midrabbanan. We've already spoken out a couple of times about this idea of Sabasa. Sabasa comes up a couple of times in this parak. That is the idea that if I borrow from you a saw of grain, and I return in a month from now a saw of grain, so really I borrowed and I return what I borrowed, Minatera, not an issue. Midrabbanan is a concern that it very much can be like Ribbis, because if when I borrow the grain from you, the value of a saw of grain was going for $10. And when I returned it to you, it now goes for $15. Effectively, I borrowed from you $10 and I returned $15, even though that wasn't the case. I borrowed from you a saw of grain and gave back a saw of grain. But it's like I borrowed $10 and gave back $15. And therefore, the Chum said, saw basa is a problem unless you have yeshlei. Again, there's a chazar. We touched this already in the fourth parak. Unless yeshlei, which means yeshlei actually is there's a few forms of yeshlei. Yeshlei could mean that either the buyer himself, the borrower, already has a sah. It's on a boat. It's not here yet. It's by his son. He had to get the keys from the attic, we said earlier. That was an example. But the point is that the borrower possesses somewhere a sah of grain. So even though he's borrowing now another sah of grain, but since he possesses a sah to return right now if need be, so we view it as if that sah is already being returned to the lender, even though it's not. It's just the whole thing is iser of ribbis midarabon. It looks like ribbis. So if it's yeshlei, we say we don't view it as sah b'sah, as if he borrowed the sah today and is returning a fresh new sah at the new market price in a month from now. Rather, we view it as if he already returned it today. That's a maila of yeshlei. Or there's a similar to the idea of yeshlei is if there's a fixed market price and it's very accessible for him to go get a sah of grain, and I believe he has to have money as well. So if the borrower is borrowing a sah of grain, has money to go to the market and buy grain right now, and there's a fixed price in the market, it's got to be fixed in the market that he can go buy the grain, even if he doesn't, because it's so easy for him to go get it, therefore that will also be considered like a yeshlei, and therefore wouldn't be a problem. Okay, one more point of Akdam before we start the Mishnah, one last point, and that is there's another case of a psik al hapeiros. This is actually very common, even till today, that if a person makes an amach, he says, I'm going to give you $1,000 now for, 40, 50 pounds, or 1,000, 50 pounds of potatoes in 2 months from now. It's a fixed contract. I'm buying you, I'm giving you the money now, and I'm locking in the price. The reason why the buyer would do it is because he's able to lock in the price, the market goes up, he gets to keep the lower price. And the seller is locking in the business, but he's also getting usage of the money, which is really ribbis. The seller is getting usage of the money 2 months before delivery of the product. In exchange for the usage, he's locking in a price, which may end up being cheaper, for the buyer, which is a form of ribbis. He's selling, going to give it to him, deliver it to him for cheap what the market price is at that point, because he had the usage of the money. That's classic idea of ribbis. Again, it's not ribbis deraisa, because it's not a fixed ribbis, it's not guaranteed. The market can go down, it can go the other way, right? So it's not ribbis deraisa certainly, but that would be problematic of ribbis on a rabbinic level. Okay, let's see the Mishnah. The Psukim describe Neshech and Tarbis. So the Zekta Mishnah. Ezu Neshech, what is Neshech? What is Tarbis? What is Tarbis? In reality, when it kills the suspense, the Umar is going to explain Neshech and Tarbis are really interchangeable. Neshech literally means to bite your friend. Tarbis means to be inflate, to make more money off your friend. So I lend 100 and I get back more than 100. That's Tarbis, I'm getting more. And Neshech is biting your friend, which also is by taking back more from him than what you lent him. But the Gemara is ultimately going to say that both Lashonos apply in the Psukim in cases of any lending with interest. They both apply. The Mishnah just wants to elaborate when do we use Mishnah's terms, the term Neshech, and when do we use the term Tarbis? So Ezu Neshech, what's Neshech? Classic. Hamal v'sel b'hei dinarim, one lends a sellout which is worth 4 dinars, and he expects back a repayment of 5 dinars. Or he lends 2 sahs of wheat, and the deal was, this is not sah b'sah, he's expected to be paid back 3 sahs of wheat. In both these cases, usser, it's classic usser, ribbis, meshur neshech, that's biting the borrower by taking more than what he gave him. Vezu tarbis, what's tarbis? Tarbis is amar b'peiros. Tarbis is that the lender is increasing his asset through this loan, he's increasing his assets, but not necessarily 100% through an isser of interest. Let's see. Ketzad. Lokam enechitum medinazav akor. What if someone bought wheat from a seller and the price that they agreed upon was a gold dinar per kor? So a gold dinar is 25 silver dinarim, and that was the price for a kor. Bechinashar, and that was key point. Bechinashar, that was the market price at that time. That was the market price right now at the time of this agreement. Amar lei tein lechiti. The buyer then said to I skipped. The keywords. Duchitim b'lam dinarim. In the interim, the buyer paid for the wheat, didn't take possession. And in the interim, the wheat went up to a value of, instead of 25 silver dinarim, 30 silver dinarim. So it went up by 20%. It went up, is now worth 30 silver dinarim. Amar lei, and then the buyer says to the seller, Tein lechiti, give me our wheat. Shani writes, I want to now go sell my wheat, make a little profit on my commodity, and use the money, but use the proceeds of my wheat to buy wine. So first off, the farshim point out that the seller would be allowed to deliver the wheat. In this case, deliver the wheat. Why? Because we spoke out before, even though you made a fixed price and you locked in a price early, which could be ribbis derabanan, since in the market it existed, that's v'chein hashar, the Mishnah spoke out. The shar was, there was a fixed price for a core of wheat was exactly 1 gold dinar or 25 silver dinarim. So the seller could have taken the money he just got from the buyer and gone to the market and bought the product. He could have done that. That's considered geishli. And therefore, when he delivers later a core of wheat, if you would deliver later a core of wheat, even though the core of wheat now is worth more, that would not be a problem. That would be fine. That would be like a yeshle. That's the shahr. That's fine. But here's the problem. Look what the seller says. Seller says, Amalei, Harei chitech hasu yisle b'shleishim. I taka owe you 30 silver dinar worth of wheat. I owe it to you. Harei l'chatsli b'yam yayin. Now, I'll owe you instead, in its place, what are we going to do? You want to go and make a transaction, sell that wheat and buy wine? You told me what your plan is? I'll owe you now the value of wine for 30 dinars. And the seller doesn't have wine at stock. He's promising to deliver the wine at a later date. Now here's the problem. Apparently, this wine didn't have the same shahr, the same locked-in amount. And the concern is if the wine goes up in price, now it's a problem. Says the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't elaborate more, but it says the Mishnah of Yain Einlei, since he doesn't have wine handy, and the chur Einlei means, like you said, not just Einlei. He doesn't have the wine now, and he doesn't even have the money anymore. The money's been spent. The original money that he got, 25 zuz that he got way back when, it doesn't exist, to go to the market to buy it, or the market isn't fixed either way. So now it's a problem, because if it goes up in value, that's a case where the fellow, the buyer, who's effectively a lender here, is being marba his assets at the expense of the seller. Again, it's not ribis d'oraisa, but that would be like the sabasa type of ribis. That's tarbis. So the Mishnah is essentially explaining that neshech is a classic, simple ribis ksusa d'oraisa, and tarbis is when the guy adds to his assets based on at the expense of the borrower, where his assets grow. Again, not ribis d'oraisa. Says Gemara now. When the shavu ribis d'oraisa, we come fresh d'rabbanan. When you came to explain tarbis, you left ribis d'oraisa in the Mishnah. We went to ribis d'rabbanan. Mechal d'oraisa neshech tarbis chad milsi. That must be a clear indication that mid d'oraisa neshech and tarbis is one and the same. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had to come onto a rabbinic explanation like we were saying of sabasa or the like to come to explain tarbis. So the Gemara now says, we have psukim neshech kesef ribis eichel. It puts neshech by kesef and ribis by eichel. Sounds like there are two different types of azura over here. Gemara says tisbara dika neshech le tarbis. The Gemara argues back. Does it make sense that you can have a neshech abiding without a tarbis, without a ribui, without growing the lender growing his stake? And taking interest, does it make sense? And vice versa, if a tarbis le neshech and you can grow a stake without being biting, the two things go hand in hand. The more attempts to explain how would it be possible. The more going to deflect it all and say it's impossible, but the more attempts to say how maybe it would be possible. Let's see. Says more neshech without tarbis echadami. What would be a case? It sounds like you're trying to get to a case on a derice level of neshech without tarbis or tarbis on neshech. Again, the key focus of neshech is biting from the buyer, the borrower, and the focus of tarbis is growth of the lenders. Assets. So, what's the case? Edais fei, trying to find the case of biting without tarbis. Edais fei may have vasrim. If the case was where the lender lent 100 prutas, and the agreement was to pay back 120 prutas, and what happened was that in the interim the value of prutas itself went down. Meikar kamei may have danka, b'lpsef kamei may have esem danka. At the time of the loan, 100 prutas was not worth a danka, and at the time of the payback, 120 prutas worth a danka. So effectively, what you have is that the agreement was binding from the borrower because you're lending 100 prutas with the agreement to pay back 120. That's binding for the borrower. But ultimately, the lender is not gaining anything because it was worth a danka, and it's still worth a danka. The 120 is also worth a danka. Says Amar Neshech Ikka, Teka Nachas Lei. Neshech is there because he's binding out more prutas from him. Teka Shaka Minei Midle Yav, he's taking back more than what he lend him. The Tarbis like Lech Revach. And Tarbis is not there because there is no Revach. The danka isve, the danka shakamine, because in terms of dankas, he lent the danka and he got back a danka. Maybe that's easy to say. That's pshat. That's a case, perhaps, of neshech play tarbis. But saif, that's more not true. How are you looking at it? Ibas meikar azot, are neshech or tarbis? You're looking at the neshech at the beginning of the transaction, 100 for 120. At that point, there was tarbis too. If you look at the beginning, you have both. And ibas of saif azot, and may go based on the end where he's paying back the same value as what he borrowed. It's not even neshech anymore because he's just paying back the same danka that he borrowed. So it's not neshech either and not tarbis. So how he's splitting neshech tarbis, that's not good. Not a good option. And Adam Bar goes the other way. Vesu, do you want to tell me you have the other way as well? The tarbis play neshech. You want to assume that you could have a tarbis, a growth for the lender in his asset without the neshech. What's the case? Ida is of mea b'mea. If the loan was originally 100 prutas, with a repayment supposed to be for 100 prutas, and may kar kind of may danka at the time of the loan 100 prutas worth of danka, the seif may have a chumsha, but at the time of the payment, it was actually worth, it was worth 100 prutas, was worth a danka and a quarter. It was worth five-fourths. May have a chumsha essentially means the 100 prutas is a danka. A danka is one-sixth of a dinner. So one-sixth of a dinner. And by the time he came to pay back, it was worth one-fifth of a dinner. So it went up by, from like 16%, one-sixth to a fifth. So less than one-sixth, not a quarter. From one-sixth to one-fifth. Tamar says, that's also not a case. Same exact time as before. Ibas Mekaz, if you go based at the beginning, Leneshech Avoy Tabris, you did 100 for 100. Ibas Saivaz, Amar Neshech Avoy Tabris. If you go based at the end, they both Neshech Avoy Tabris. Ella, Amar Rav, will stop with this. Yat Amaitzi Leneshech Avoy Tabris, or Tabris Leneshech. You don't find Neshech with that Tabris, Tabris Leneshech. It's all the same thing. Vlechuk and Akasav, Elav, Elav, Shnei, Lavim. That's the aside. The Torah listed two types of things by lending Ribis, meaning Ribis and Neshech. Not that they're different. Every case of lending the Ribis is lending the Tarbis and vice versa, the Tarbis with the Neshech. And the Torah gave two different Neshechahs, two different Shprach, in order to be over on two Lavim. We'll see more about this tomorrow, Mitzvah. We'll pick up Tanar Banan. Tomorrow morning, someone wanted to start a little earlier, 7:40.